You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello there, welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith. This is the Comedian's Comedian podcast, in which I take your favourite comedians one at a time and find out exactly what makes them tick and learn all about their creativity, their resilience, their development, their creative processes and all of that kind of stuff. And today I'm bringing you an episode with the incredible tub-thumping powerhouse of a comedian, Godfrey. This was recorded live from South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, just a few weeks ago. And we're going to find out about Godfrey and how he has been in the game for the best part of 3 decades and yet still radiates happiness. He's one of the most mentally robust comics I've ever come across. And I mean, just there was so much I prepared for this interview. And now just in kind of assembling the show notes and discovering the enormous wealth of stuff that he has out there. I've listened to a couple of his albums. I've seen him live a few times. I had no idea his YouTube channel was as enormous as it is. I've just been spending a very happy few minutes watching his... Just do yourself a favour and Google Godfrey's Richard Pryor impression. He can not only do Pryor, he can do all the different voices that Pryor does, including Pryor's white guy voice. And it is, as one commenter says, it is Inception level. I mean, he has got an incredible amount of stuff out there. So follow the show notes. You can find his YouTube channel, his podcast, and Godfrey We Trust. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram. But let's get on with this interview. We're going to talk about his phenomenal work ethic, which drives this huge output. We are going to find out why someone this happy needs to do comedy in the first place. And we're also going to learn about the business dimension to comedy that he struggles with and where his confidence can sometimes fail him. This, without further ado, at long last, is Godfrey. Let's talk about you. Let's talk about your comedy.
Yes.
I saw you live for like the second or third time last night. You did a short set in Esther's.
It was awesome.
It was awesome.
Yes.
You headlined the show. It was already an extremely high quality show. The curation of the comedy here is fantastic.
Yes.
And it was a belting show. And then you came on and absolutely destroyed.
That, I think, comes from training in New York City. Being from Chicago and doing comedy in New York, and I don't know what cities people are from, but New York is the greatest comedy city ever, period. You know,
why is that? What makes it great? Is it the amount of stage time?
It's the amount of stage time. It's the quality of stage time. It's the quality of comedians, because, I mean, when I first got there, I was on the same stages as Seinfeld and Chappelle and Rock and Robin Williams, rest in peace, Gilbert Godfrey. I mean, that was just a regular thing. It was me, Bill Burr, Patrice O'Neill, Robert Kelly, Colin Quinn. That was just the normal rotation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Silverman, all that. It was just the quality of comedy. And New York being an international city, you had people from different countries that spoke different languages. So when we would go overseas, it would be easy for us because we meet the people from those countries in New York.
Yeah, okay.
You understand? And New Yorkers are very like... give us the good shit. You know what I'm saying? And on average, I was doing like 40 shows a week. So I would be on stage five times a night.
I just took that in as if that was normal.
Yeah, 40 shows a week.
Yeah,
we would do like, you do like 3 to 5 shows a night. That's about 25. And then the weekend, you'd do like 8 each night. Like 8 shows. Yeah, so it would be like 45 to 50 a week. That was the average I was going.
Is there? There's obviously a tremendous upside to that amount of reps. Do you mean that's like training comedy? You'd be training all situations, all of those kind of things. Yeah. Are there downsides to kind of working that hard? Do you like whether it's exhaustion or whether like is it all positive experience or can you overdo it?
You get burned out, kind of. Sometimes I would literally like yesterday. I went on stage. I didn't know what the fuck I was gonna say. But there's something about having so much material, you go, oh, yeah, let me try this.
Sure.
You just go into automatic, okay, I'm going to do this. And if that don't work, you switch up. They don't know.
Yeah.
And you saw Emma and all that. They're all New York comics.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a – and I'm not saying that, you know, we're the greatest. We're just the greatest. But when you go on stage and you see New York comedy, you know New York comics have been in the room. Because there's just a different edge that we have, you know. Some cities are very like politically correct and bullshit like that. But New Yorkers are like, yeah, just fucking give it to us.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if we get offended, we'll let you know. Just go. You know, there's a freedom. And I think with comedy, well, they're trying to police comedy now, which is bullshit. It's not going to work. You know, which like, for example, everybody knows the Chappelle situation. With the whole trans thing, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you're not, okay, like in Minnesota when Chappelle was, he did a concert in Minnesota. So the trans community said, yeah, cancel the concert. And so they canceled his first concert. So 15 minutes later, he went to another theater and packed it out.
Yeah.
Right after that, they packed it out. So you can't cancel. Like well, that,
I mean, I'm definitely on the kind
we
of
we are your saviors.
I'm definitely on the woke side of that argument, right?
Oh, okay.
But so what point are you making? You're saying that it's like I agree with you that it's not possible to cancel comedians.
No,
I think comedians
really.
Are making a lot of fuss about being canceled, but actually it's not really a thing.
Not really. I mean, people
like people are kind of selling their
people
specials.
Gonna fuck with you, man. Your fans are gonna fuck with you, man. If they like you, they like you. And we don't go on stage trying to offend people. I mean, you know what I'm saying? My thing is like comedy is it's pain. It's like you get comedy from fucked up situations.
Yeah.
If you're a Carlin fan, if you're a Richard Pryor fan, from Joan Rivers, who I've worked with, all they come from fucked up situations. You know what I mean? Richard Pryor was raised by prostitutes. You understand where I'm coming from? George Carlin, he had coke problems, shit like that. But everybody comes from a fucked up. So comedy is. A lot of times from pain.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As a guy like myself that looks like me, and there's other guys that look like me, you got racism, you got mass incarceration, you got police harassment, you got all that other shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about the shit. And if you get offended by it, fuck you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This is my experience. You're mad at my shit? You think I'm lying about, you know, and I'm trying to be funny with it. Like, for example, I talk about I bought a Fiat in New York so police would leave me alone. You know what I mean? Because a black man in a fucking SUV, that's where they stop you. But a hatchback, no one's fucking with you. You know what I'm saying? But this is my pain that I'm talking about. But I'm not lying about it. It's not me going, oh, white people ain't shit. No, it's like, white people ain't shit. But not all of you are, but the ones that I'm talking about, because we talk in general terms, in general. So I've seen people go, oh, you know, if I'm doing, why is it, and one lady asked me, why is it always about race? I go, do you think I wake up wanting racism? You think black people go, man, racism, come on, let's go. Bring it on. No. Why is it always about race? I don't make it about race. The world does.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, when I'm on an elevator and someone's holding their purse, did I make it about race?
Yeah, yeah.
You feel where I'm coming
from?
Yeah,
totally. I totally understand. I don't disagree with any of that.
And I still snatch the purse when the lady holds it, but still, because they're not that strong. So... What made you think holding like this was gonna keep me from taking it, bitch? No, it's good. Joke.
One of the things I want to talk about.
This is early comedy. It's very early to be.
Oh yeah, for the benefit of the listener, it's too early for this. This is 1 p.m. So,
sorry for making you laugh early. I'm sorry.
What I want to talk to you about is the kind of the interplay that you have on stage that I could see between stuff that I guess is kind of written. It's like it's a bit where you know where it's going.
Yeah.
And you have, and I couldn't tell, it was so seamless. You looked like there was so much freedom and so much play and silliness in what you were doing.
Yes.
This stuff about the balloon, you know, very current, the Chinese spy balloon, you know, and I'm not going to ask you necessarily to repeat the stuff, but like clearly there is like, you know, there's the bit about the balloon. And like, but for you, is it like, it felt like there's a framework and you probably know what one of the last jokes might be. But you're so free. You're so experienced. It was just an education to watch someone dance so lightly around a subject, incorporating everything in the room and clearly incorporating stuff that was just coming to you ad hoc.
Yeah, it's just, it's, I was a pre-med psych major in college. Go figure, I'm Nigerian. What do you want me to do? So I was, and so it's like the brain is so amazing because when you, whatever you specialize in, you get that little crease in your brain, you know, and I think I have a deep indent of comedy. So sometimes I'll be on stage and my brain will go, here, I go, what the fuck? How did I connect all that? That's what happens when you specialize in something. I think I call it phenomena where when you get in a zone, everything just starts connecting because you've done so much material. You've done so much. You have so much experience because I've done a lot of comedy in different countries, too, like from Saudi Arabia, Kuwait to Lithuania. I was in Russia in 2018. I was the first American comic to do an English set in Moscow to 400 Russians with headphones on that didn't know English with an interpreter in a fucking booth.
Oh, my God.
It was the weird. That was the weirdest shit ever because the guy was like, we don't know English, but we like your comedy. What? And so I'm doing comedy in English and this dude's in the booth interpreting what I'm doing. I'm like going, yo, what the fuck? He's like, I'm like, and the Russians are like, it was the fuck.
With how much of a delay? Like, a couple of seconds?
But there was a kid in the front who I think knew a little bit of English and his headphones were off of his face. So I heard the guy in the booth, so I timed it. So I heard his voice, so I was just timing it for him. I was like this, so he's like, so it was like maybe 1 or 2 seconds.
Okay.
I did an hour and a half.
Oh my God.
Yeah, because I went around Russia, and of course, you know, you've always learned about Russia from Ivan the Terrible to, right, the Kremlin to Brezhnev. So I already had some Dostoevsky push. I already knew that shit, so I was like, all right. So they loved that. They were like, how do you know all of these things? How do you know Pushkin? I say, we were forced to learn the shit. You know what I'm saying? So that it was just one of those things. So all of that experience, I've even performed in London. And was it Piccadilly Square at Comedy Store?
Uh-huh.
I've done the store. So all that information just comes together when you're on stage and you just pick from wherever.
I want to drill down into that idea of the zone because you were clearly in the zone. Like you walked on,
got in the zone
and stayed in the zone. And I think that's what made it so alive. So what are the components of that? If you wanted to try and break that down technically to express what that is to someone who may never have been in the zone in a comedy thing. Everyone's been in the zone in what they do.
In sports.
So what is it in comedy? How do you get into it? And how do you, what bounces you out of it? And how do you get back in?
Well, I think the zones are created when, like I said, the experience, the stage time. Yeah, because to be in the zone, you got to have experience. You got to have the material also. Mm-hmm. And the confidence, the fearlessness of it. Because when you first start comedy, I remember first starting comedy. And by the way, I'm old school. So I started in Bernie Mac's club in Chicago. So he had an open mic. It was me, Dion Cole, Corey Holcomb, all of us. Hannibal Buress is from Chicago. So we all, and it was like just unwinding the microphone from with the wire was nerve-wracking. Like when you first start, hey, what's up, guys? Sometimes you leave the wire around your leg. You're so fucking scared. But after doing it over and over, you would just take the mic. You know, everything took 1,000 times to do right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's the confidence that you have, too. Because there's some jokes that I know that are shit, but I do it with such confidence. That's from experience going, yo, I got this shitty joke, but wait till I do it. It's going to be amazing. It's from doing the stage time over. It's just I call it scenario recognition also.
Oh, come on.
Scenario recognition. See, British like that.
I love this.
Oh,
I love this.
That terminology.
Yes. Come on. You've invented the thing there. It's never come up in 400 episodes. Tell me what that
like,
is.
It's like scenario recognition is it's like in sports when you see the playoffs. The more experienced team usually ends up winning because they've been to the playoffs a bunch of times.
Sure.
And usually a new team doesn't always win the championship.
Okay.
But the older guys are like, I've seen this situation before. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like with 3 seconds left on the clock. I know this shit. The same thing with comedy. There's never an experience. I've experienced everything. I've done comedy in front of cancer patients, old people. I've done prisons. I've done women's maximum security, men's. I've done battered wives shelter. Don't know why they brought a male to a battered wives shelter, but I did a battered wives shelter, and I went like this the whole time. They didn't laugh. Just kidding. Listen, I'm fucking with you. It was a joke. I didn't say you better laugh. You think you're fucking around? Just joking.
It's 1 p.m., girlfriend.
But no, I've done battered wives shelters. There's nothing I haven't seen. So when you already have that experience in your mind, you go, okay, I know this situation. Mm-hmm. You know, heckler, I know this situation. You know what I mean?
So is there any way of fast tracking that experience? Because obviously that's valuable. You've been going on for decades and you've done all of this experience.
Yeah.
Is there, like, we've seen comics who are much newer who manage to replicate that kind of confidence.
Right.
Is there a fast track to doing it, or is it just brute force?
No. There's no fast track. And it depends on the person. Some people are kind of a little bit more phenomenal than others. You mm-hmm. see, some comedians are just like, you see younger comics like, wow, that person's going to be really good. Like, yeah, they are really mature for that. But I don't give a shit what you say. You have to put the time in. It's like acting. It's no different than acting. You have to put theater work. You have to put the work in. The really good actors are stage trained. Comedy, you can't skip steps. I don't give a fuck, because I was funny as shit when I first got up there. But I sucked. My material was garbage. I didn't have anything to say. But I was funny, but I had to work on it. People think that the Instagram shit's going to help you. No, you'll get recognized faster. Yeah, but the stage time, because you're in a time continuum. You can do a sketch. I know there's some comics that do a sketch where they put their finger in their ass and they got 10 million views. Right. And then they go, yeah, now they're booked at a comedy club, but they're known for putting their finger in their ass. So now people are like, I paid $50 and I want to see you do an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you got to tell jokes. Put your finger in your ass. OK, now what?
Such vivid imagery.
Like, come on, people. Isn't this what you came for? They're like, OK, what else? It's a time. You know what I'm saying? So people get delusional about Instagram, like Instagram. I said, no, you have to show up. That's what I love about comedy. It's the hardest form of entertainment. Name something that's harder. It's comedy. But people don't really respect it as much.
Okay.
You know what?
Why do you think that is?
Because this is my theory. Because, like, when I watch my friends in New York at that, I have a lot of ballet friends. I go watch them. Alvin Ailey. I live down the street from Alvin. So I'll watch Alvin Ailey. And I go, wow. I go to a concert. No one's heckling them. Everyone's quiet. Everyone's, because they're doing their little, you know, no one's going, yo, jump higher, motherfucker. No one's, stretch them legs out, kick it higher. No one's saying shit. Everyone's quiet because it's ballet. I go to opera. I got friends in opera. Here you go, Rofia. No one's going, man, you can sing like a motherfucker. No one's saying shit. Everyone's quiet. It's the opera. You know, whether you go to classical music shit, you quiet. Wow, they're playing the cello. Let me shut up. You know what I mean? But comedy, for some reason,
why?
Because I think everybody has a sense of humor. It's natural. Everybody in here makes somebody laugh. The reason why you hang with groups of certain people is because they make you laugh the most. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So everybody has a sense of humor. So I think that everybody thinks they're your equal because they've made people laugh in situations. They go, well, I'm funny, shit. And they'd be like, oh, hey, blah, 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 blah. I'm hilarious at the water cooler at work. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So they think it transfers over, because when you're a professional making people laugh, you think you're my equal. But they don't. It's like people who think they can box because they have arms. When I went into the ring, I went to Pacquiao's gym in L.A. and Freddie Roach, who's one of the most famous boxing coaches. I went into the ring. I wanted to, I want to learn boxing. So from watching Ali and all these guys, I'm thinking I know how to box because, right? I'm doing this shit in the ring. They're like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, isn't that how you got? They're like, that's not how it's done.
Yeah.
So, and I learned that, wow, boxing is a real science. I thought they were just, no, they say you got to punch from your legs. What? Mm-hmm. Punch from your legs. Oh, it's a technique. Oh, you got a twist. It was so many things I didn't know. That's how a lot of people approach comedy in the first place. They're like, oh, you're just up there talking shit. I go, no, we're not.
Yeah,
we
right.
make it look like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so much work and so much thought put. Like, if I, there's like sometimes you can do one joke 7,000 times. And the 7,001 time you finally find the right word for that joke, you know what it is?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You go, oh, shit, I should have said dog instead of cat. Shit, it took me 10 years. It takes that long. But a lot of times people don't really have the respect that comedy deserves. But I also do blame it on the marketing.
Okay.
I blame it on the marketing because a lot of times when you go to a comedy club, it's always, you know, like, or when you go to an, you know, any other kind of art form, the font is always beautiful, right? Welcome to the ballet, right? The opera, New York City. But comedy's like, oh, welcome to comedy. It's the comedy house. You know? So people go, look at this font. This font fucking stinks. So it's this goofy shit that they market us with.
Yeah.
I think it should be, welcome to Laugh Sessions with Godfrey.
Could you do? You must have tried that. You must have
tried
that in your marketing.
And people say you have such a good point because that's the only thing. But comedy is the hardest form of entertainment. I don't care what anybody says. And if you don't approach it properly, it's going to get you. I can guarantee you that shit because I'm a funny motherfucker and I've seen it. And I still look at comedy as, wow, it's still such a difficult art form.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
really, I never get too big for the art form because it's always going to punch you down because you're never done.
We were talking about that.
Am I making sense,
yeah.
everyone? I hope I'm making sense.
You're also frightening
even
a lot
I'm,
of these nice people.
Even if I'm not. I don't give a shit. God damn it.
You.
God damn, fuck you guys.
A lot of the examples.
Comedy fucking paranoia. Fuck you guys. You don't like me?
And is that, I wonder if that's part of the flow as well, because there must be moments when you're not flowing and
yeah,
you
oh,
think
yeah.
to yourself, this isn't working.
No.
And part of the kind of getting yourself back on the horse, getting yourself back in the zone must be about, like, is there a part of you in the back of your mind if it's not working on one, you know,
yeah,
some occasion
well, when you're
going, hey, these guys
they don't
are wrong.
Know.
Yeah.
When you're experienced, my thing in comedy, just the way the brain works, people remember your ending. You can start off shitty in a, like, say you have a half hour comedy to do. Your first 10 minutes suck ass. But the last 20 you murdered, people go, hey, you started off Rocky, but the worst is when you start off, oh yeah, you kill her, and then you end shitty, they go, ooh, what happened?
Yeah.
For some reason the brain is trained to go, oh, at the end he was amazing. So you if you have enough experience, when I literally, and this is all facts, I have about 7 hours of jokes. I could do 7 different hours, literally. I can go, okay, I'm gonna do that. That didn't work. Okay, that 20 didn't work. Fuck that. I'll do this other 20. But that's from time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can switch up my shit anytime. That's just experience. I couldn't do that at the beginning.
So this is Godfrey. As you can hear, the I should probably have said this at the top. The circumstances of this podcast recording were different to many. We were in the exhibition hall, which, as I may have said on the show, is a bit like peeping into a rift some 20 years into the future. It's an astonishing place to be, and it's a very loud place to be, and there's a lot of background noise. But as I was saying to Charlie, who books South by Southwest and looks after the books, doesn't do it justice, looks after and curates the Comedy Strand, that if there was one comic who was able to cope and produce an incredible guest for ComCom in that kind of environment, which was a very walk-by, up-and-running kind of people all over the place kind of thing, then it would be Godfrey. So more from him in just a second. This was a live recording. I think we only did 50 minutes, so no extras, I'm afraid. But you can, of course, go to comedianscomedian.com/insiders for extra content from every episode that has it, as well as ad-free episodes and the, you know, the what else is there? There's another thing, isn't there? Oh, it's the Slack app. There's basically a sort of workspace app whereby we can congregate and do mysterious things that happen in workspaces. Thank you to everybody who's been getting in touch. Thank you to everyone who's been jumping on the Insiders Club. I realise there's been a big break and it's very exciting to be back. Hope you enjoyed the Tom Horton episode last week. Coming up next week, Michelle Brazier. And is Brazier? I'd say Brazier, but I'm pretty sure she says Brazier. Fantastic Australian comic who you may know from her brilliant solo shows, one-woman comedy shows, as well as by being one of the boys in the Auntie Donna sketches and shows and Netflix materials and tours and all the rest of it. I've just come off the back of recording that a few hours ago, and it's an absolutely gold standard episode of ComCom, so I hope you will look forward to that. I'm going to chuck that out next week. There, I've committed to it in this scramble for once in my life to get one ahead rather than hastily recording the blurbs moments before the show goes out. Apologies to producer Nathan for my continuing inability to get ahead of myself. Today this changes, and I swear it's so on the podcast. More from Godfrey in just a second. Thank you to the people who've been coming to my previews, my show Spoilers, which is, I hadn't mentioned this before, it just got nominated for an award. Spoilers, I'm pleased to announce, got nominated for Best Show at the Leicester Comedy Festival. And the most exciting thing about getting nominated for Best Show at the Leicester Comedy Festival, it was with a preview rather than a finished show. So now I'm in the fun position of having to work on the show whilst also not spoil what was good enough about it that the work in progress got nominated. So if I later find out, you know, I'll take out a big chunk of it and go, this must radically change. And then later I speak to one of the judges from the Leicester Comedy Festival and they go, no, that was the bit we liked. Isn't there just everything to play for? So there's previews, loads of previews going on. And basically I need to work out the right way to connect stuartgoldsmith.com to the Linktree site, which is linktr.ee/Stuart Goldsmith, in order that there is a one-stop shop where you can find everything, because I've got some previews coming up. I'll update that in a moment, and I very much hope that you come and see it. I will at some point list the previews. And look, the magic of the pause button enables me to be able to do that instantly now. I've got previews coming up at Top Secret at the McCuncliffe Festival. I'm going to be on the Saturday night at 6 p.m. in the school. I'm also going to be at the Bristol Comedy Festival, which I'm partly curating, which is the 14th of May, Sunday the 14th of May in Bristol. We have Spencer Jones. We have Sarah Barron. We have Freya Parker. Why don't I just tell you everyone that's on there? Because that's also in front of me as well. Who do we have at the moment? We have Marcel Lucan, we have Damon Bamra, we have Stevie Martin, Janine Haruni, Greg Winfield. I've got to do everyone now because I've started, so I've got to do everyone. Louise Lee, we've got Jack Campbell, Bert Williamson, me, we have Joe Wells, John Luke Roberts, and I think Ignacio Lopez as well. And I've got a cracker of a ComCom episode lined up for you with Ignacio. That's coming your way soon. And in the can, I'd forgotten all about. Can't say I've forgotten about that. I don't mean I've forgotten about that excellent episode. I hadn't put that on the list of stuff I've got. So a free gift for me and for you all. So if you're in Bristol, go to bristolcomedyfest.com and find out a bit more about the Bristol Comedy Festival. That's where one of my whips is. The other ones are I'm at the Bill Murray. I'm going to be in Leicester. I'm going to be at Smoke and Mirrors in Bristol. I'm going to be at 2 North down in London. I'm going to be at Leeds at some point at the Comedy Crate, which is in... I never know where the Comedy Crate is in... I know where it is. It's in Northampton. So I'll be there. I'm going to be in Leamington. I'm going to be in Cardiff, Cheltenham. And I've just put one in Shoreditch. So please, I will now update all of the things in my link tree and put a link to that from stuartgoldsmith.com. So go there for all your stuff. Jesus Christ, doesn't it? This sort of ravenous ecosystem. Have you seen the end? Have you seen the opening credits to The Last of Us? That's what it's like being a comic these days, having to try and kind of fulfill, create all your objectives, create all the parameters for where people can find you, and then try and bloody fulfill them all. It's busy and fun is what it is. But let's discuss that later. For now, let's get back to Godfrey.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I want to talk to you about confidence, one of those elements of flow. You're obviously an incredibly confident person.
Yes.
And you talk, it's funny, lots of the examples that you've made have had kind of physical ramifications. They're physical examples. I know you're a big gym guy. You were talking about being sore all the time. You know,
I'm sore all the time.
He's sore all the time.
Yeah.
But you're, I wonder how much of your confidence on stage is tied to your physical confidence.
You know, here's where I don't have confidence, the business part, because the business is where the bullshit starts, you know? Mm-hmm. On stage, creativity, you can't tell me shit. I'm like, some people are going to like me, some people are not. It's subjective, but I know I'm good at what I do. But when it comes to the business, like, let's say, like, a lot of my friends that are really good, they hate pitching ideas because you got somebody with a clipboard from whatever fucking... You know, Warner Brothers. You're like, you got to pitch your little dumb idea. Yeah, I play a karate teacher in a Korean restaurant. You know what I mean? You're like, it sucks because it's not you're giving the power to someone else to judge you. You go, I just made 400 Russians laugh the other day, bitch. Just fucking pick me, you know?
Yeah.
That's why I love Joe Rogan so much, because Rogan has changed the game. You know, just podcasting has changed the game where you don't have to answer to anybody anymore. I mean, Austin is run, it like the entertainment is run by comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tony Hinchcliffe, Rogan. All Rogan just built a brand new comedy club, which is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Without waiting on people. That's kind of what I like about technology now, is you don't have to wait on anybody anymore. You can build your own audience.
So, but specifically bringing it back to you and what you mentioned you struggled with, which aspect of that do you struggle with?
Of the business.
Like the
part?
Business, the
just,
kind of DIY.
Just pitching ideas because I hate people. And I have to sit in these rooms. We're going to meet with the executive director. Yeah, that's how they, that's the voice of, ugh. You're going to meet with the executive director, producer,
but
and you go in there pitching your idea. When you know the shit is nice, you let other comedians read. You're like, yo, this is dope. Then you're fucking 9 o'clock in the morning going, well, I just don't see it. The fuck you mean you don't see it? That's what I don't have confidence
so
in.
So what is it?
I need to get better at it, but...
What is it that other comics are able... What is it that they have that means they're able to deal with those kind of encounters that you're not? Is it pride because you've smashed room support so many
pride,
times?
There's just... it's hard for me to be phony. It's tough, man. I like being authentic. I like being around real people. And that's a lot of people like that. There's a lot of comedians that are like that. Burr is like that. Bill Burr got big off his podcast. Monday Morning Podcast. Bill was another anti-fuck everybody. You see how Bill Burr is. You watch him, he just goes in, you know. But he got big from his Monday Morning Podcast, and it, you know, Mark Maron, who's been a friend of mine, I did his podcast twice. Maron did his, got big. Same way. He was a guy that couldn't do the industry shit. Mm-hmm. But the industry came to them. You understand? So it's just about, I just like authenticity. I like being around real people. I just went to an event in New York City, just like one of these, you know, celebrity. I went. It was hard for me because I can't. It's hard. Mm-hmm. It hurts my face to be phony.
But do you think? But
you know,
this is
just to challenge. But I know it's part of the business.
Just to challenge you on that, I feel like you've got this preconception that in order to receive feedback on an idea, you need that, like, that's tied to being phony, right?
Sort of,
is there not an element of you which could be authentically vulnerable and listen to someone's feedback on your idea, given that they might be more experienced at making TV shows?
I think being a stand-up is vulnerable enough. Like, talking to people you don't know and saying, hey, I got some funny shit, that's good enough. Listen, there's stuff on TV, and you guys have seen it. Like, how the fuck did this get on?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, hey, and I've been in rooms where, you know, there's certain meetings where I didn't give a fuck. So I go, hey, I noticed those posters are really shitty shows. Why don't you just pick mine?
How did that go down?
They never talked to me again. But I knew that. But I was like, but these shows suck. Why can't you just pick mine?
Yeah.
That's just being from frustration and shit.
Sure.
But I didn't care. It depends on the meeting.
So are you... Do you think there's anything to that question, though, that idea of, like, maybe you're resistant to being vulnerable or to or resistant
being told
to,
what to do.
Yeah, well, like, kinda, well, listen, if, like, that's your being told what to do is your term for it. What I'm suggesting is there a kind of a humility that you struggle with when
no,
someone?
I actually don't. No, I actually don't. I remember going into Comedy Central, right? And I did. My first special was a Comedy Central half hour special. Comedy Central. I did. It, that was when Comedy Central was actually funny. And I did Premium Blend. I did half-hour special Comedy Central. I used to do stuff on Comedy Central. One of my first things was Zach Galifianakis and the Sklar Brothers. It was called Apartment 2F, and it was awesome. But I remember going in later on to Comedy Central when it was just different, and they called me in, and I was like, and the guy is like, hey, what's up? You know, he's one of these dudes. He's like, hey. Like, hey, what's going on? You know?
Yeah.
He goes, man, we really like your stuff. I'm telling you, he talked like that. You really like your stuff. I'm like, okay. And I go, well, I'm looking at Comedy Central, and there's a lot of things. I don't know why you picked me. I think I'm from a different school of comedy. And he goes, what? And I'm sitting with my manager who doesn't believe me that some of these meetings are horrific. And my manager is a little nerdy Irish guy. He goes, I'm from a different school of comedy. And he goes, well, what school is that? I go, funny motherfuckers. I come from funny motherfuckers. I don't know anything else. I just know how to get on stage and tear the crowd up. It's what I do.
Yeah.
And I go, and he goes, well, we have, and he's naming people. I go, those aren't stand-up comics.
Yeah.
Those are, and my manager's like, what the hell are you talking about? They're not funny. I said, I told you.
Yeah,
I told you.
Yeah, yeah.
These are the meetings we go through. I go, funny people. Just pick funny people, period.
But is it? Are you not talking about two distinct skill sets? Like, you're an expert at one skill set, getting on stage in a room,
but
tearing the roof up.
I'm good at comedy and situational comedies too. Not every stand-up comic can do situational comedy, because there's great improv actors, like your Will Ferrells, like the Sherry O'Terry's, like, you know what I'm saying, Tina Fey. They're funny. They're like really good at what they do. A lot of them have studied. Where, being from Chicago, I had a job at Second City as a barback. I used to make cappuccinos and wash dishes when I was watching Chris Farley. This dude from Wisconsin who would, like, literally plant his face on tables, which was the funniest shit in the world. I go, who's that fat dude? You know what I mean? But Chris Farley was funny. You know what I mean? David Spade, to me, these guys were funny. I came from that school. Yeah. I don't care if it's situational comedy. I don't care if it's stand-up. I just like funny people. I grew up watching Lucille Ball. I'm sorry. I grew up watching Jackie Gleason, even though this is 1950. I grew up watching funny people, man. You know what I mean? Yeah. Martin Lawrence. I just grew up watching funny people. I like funny motherfuckers. I don't care what rate. I just like funny people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Our sitcoms were way better. All in the Family. Are you kidding me? Sanford and Son, Golden Girl, funny shit. That's what I like. I don't like comedies that are just, because sometimes here's what happens, and this is what happens. People will say, wow, I love this type of funny. And I go, well, that's not really that funny to me. Remember, comedy's subjective. And then you'll run into people who are really funny. Go, well, wow, that was funny. I go, well, that's real comedy, because a lot of times they'll put mediocre. Listen, I'm not talking as if I'm the best. I'm just keeping it 100. They'll put people, it's a lot of mediocrity, I think, in comedy. There's a lot. And they force it on people. And the brain is amazing, because they'll go, oh, no, I think it's pretty good. But then when you see real shit, you go, no, this is the real shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, if in England, I'm sure there's some people who are like, ugh, right? That shit. You know,
yeah,
how you guys
for sure.
Do.
But then I think there are people who are funny people in the room. And funny people on stage, and there are people who are really good at writing funny.
No,
and then
that's very true.
And then there's this kind of nexus between, there's like the Venn diagram in the middle. There's people who deserve to be massively successful.
Yeah.
They're not always the same people who are massively successful.
Of course not. No, I listen. I'm just talking from just my perspective. I don't care. Some people may disagree with me, but I just like funny shit. I don't care. So, I don't care if it's alternative. I don't give a damn. Like Zach Galifianakis, these are the first alternative people. David Cross, Zach Galifianakis, Sarah Silverman. They make me laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
They're funny. Patton Oswalt.
Well, something I really enjoyed about your set last night and your other material, I heard your most recent special on Spotify. Something I really loved is that as well as that kind of really hard, punchy, big punchline comedy, you're really silly. There's like real gentle silliness in there. That stuff in your special, Regular Black, which is about your Nigerian dad bringing you up and kind of always trying to one-up you on all the hardships he suffered as a kid. And like the second example is you want to buy these kind of whatever they are, Air Max trainers.
At the time, the Air Jordans, when Michael Jordan was playing for the Bulls, everybody wanted Air Jordans, and I wasn't really a basketball guy. I was more football and baseball. So, because I grew up around the Cubs stadium, like I wasn't that far from Wrigley Field, and so Jordans, everybody's getting Jordans, and I'm like, I asked my dad, I said, Dad, you know everybody's getting Jordans. I'd like to get some Jordans. He said, how much do they cost? they were like $200. He's like $200. Will they let you play? You know, it's like when I was your age, we didn't have feet. You understand? You know, that type of immigrant shit. So, that was
so
like...
That, but the silliness I really like. Do you see that's like quite a fun dynamic between punch, punch, and then a silly idea?
I like being silly, too, because a lot of times, too, there's an aesthetic to comedy, too. Like you and me to look totally different. You're this white dude, da-da-da, I'm this black dude, kind of muscular. So sometimes you gotta... How do I interpret my message to these people?
Because
they're already going to have a misconception about you, whether you're a heavy set person, tall, skinny, whatever. They're going to go, what are they going to talk? That's the beauty of comedy, is people judge you by what you look like, which I love that. Because they go, what is he going to talk about? And then when you change your voice, one man, you're doing all kinds of shit. You're changing, they're like, fuck, I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
Or when you do Trump, this is a very good place. I'm very happy to be here. How the fuck?
Yeah, totally.
How did that come out of your voice? Why? Because I'm a black guy? You go, yeah. But that's the beauty of it. But it's just vocal cords. We all have the same vocal cords. But I like that comedy is judged by what you look like. So sometimes I have to do a silly joke, you know, especially if I'm talking about race. I go, how can I make it silly? It's like George Carlin was good for that. He would do hardcore shit, but there was a charm to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There was a charm to it. So that's the beauty of actually the art of
comedy.
Yeah,
right. And it's so in terms of what you want to express through your comedy, like what's most important to you on any given show? Is it getting a standing ovation or is it getting your thoughts off your chest?
Getting
or is
my
it, what
thoughts
is it?
Off my chest.
So have you ever been in like in the pandemic maybe or other times in your life gone without comedy for long enough that it's had an effect on you? Or have you always just like addicted from day one?
Yeah, I out of the 52 weeks, I probably travel 50 of them, 48 to 50. I'm always working. During pandemic, we were doing virtual shows. That's how great comedians are. We did. I was in my underwear in the living room, going, you know, it's crazy out there. You know, I mean, I still perform. We performed in parking lots. I don't know if anybody ever experienced the COVID shows. Parking lots.
Yeah.
We did shit where people were in their cars, and if they laughed, they honked the horns. It was so disgusting. It was like meep, 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 meep. So if it doesn't sound like a traffic jam, you're bombing. You feel me?
Yeah. I've done those shows.
So I did those shows. I never stopped. I did lives. I did Instagram lives for 2 years straight. Never missed a day because I didn't know what was happening. I did 5 to 6 hour lives till 5, 6 in the morning.
God.
Yeah.
To how many people are watching over a 6 hour period?
It depends.
And is there a moment when it's like the numbers?
4,000 or 5,000. My numbers went up. And remember, there's different time zones. People from London.
Yeah.
I just woke up. What's going on? Blah, blah. It's 4 in the morning in New York, but it's...
I didn't know lives could be 6 hours long. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Oh, because there was a point where Instagram gave you 4 hours straight. Before, it was just... Now it's back to an hour limit, but I would turn it right back on. But then I remember going 4 hours straight. I was like, oh, it's still going. I would go 4 hours straight just... yapping. I didn't care who got on. That was just my way of surviving and keeping my chops tight, you know.
Let's talk about that. When you say that's your way of surviving, what is it that if you aren't able to gig, what is it that you're missing out on in terms of your in terms of your soul, in terms of your mental health? No, I mean, maybe you don't know because you gig so much you don't know who you are if you don't gig.
Listen, man, I took 7 years of yoga, 10 years of martial arts. I'm always doing something, you know. It's okay to like rest. It's okay, but I'm always like writing shit down. You know what I mean? It's like I'm always kind of creating, so I never. I think the longest I've been off of comedy is maybe 2 weeks, maybe if that.
But it doesn't sound like most people I could imagine saying that, like, I never stop gigging. Part of me would be going, are you okay? Like, is that healthy to do that? But you seem like you have a pretty healthy approach to it.
Do what you love. I'm like, I was going to go into psychiatry, bro. I don't need to. Comedy
would you
is
not
a psych ward.
It's
all, everyone's fucking nuts, man. Even the people that come see comedy are crazy. After shows, they're like, I really like all your stuff. They have headshots of you've never seen. Where the fuck do you get that? Can you just sign? I was waiting for like 5 hours for you. Dude, people are crazy that love comedy also.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a psych ward. It's like, I think I've gone beyond my degree in psychology. That's what I got my degree. It's like I've gone beyond it because it's just – and then traveling the world to different countries, you're like, what? Like, it's like – you know what I mean? It's like this is wonderful shit. You get tired as a human being. You get tired. But I chose to be a comedian. Nobody forces you to be a comedian or an actor. You're a narcissistic piece of shit that looks in the mirror going, shit, I'm cute. I think I can do this. You know what I mean? You do it on your own. That's your own narcissistic choice to become an entertainer.
So what? Like, do you have advice or strategies or kind of ways of thinking that you could pass on for when it doesn't work? You know, when comics listening to this, I love talking to someone with such a robust attitude to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you feel like you kind of radiate this kind of happiness, satisfaction.
Yeah, I'm angry at a lot of shit. You know, you always go, wow, I'd like to be there.
Yeah.
Because as an artist, as anybody here, and you always want to grow and do other shit.
And particularly,
you know, I mean,
when you've been going as long as you have, a lot of those people that you've mentioned, once your contemporaries, are now stratospheric.
Some are stratosphere. I'm like right under them.
Yeah.
But you're like, yes, but it you can't. There's no blueprint. But I know one thing: if you don't, it's like you're damned if you do. Now with, you know, social media, you're damned if you do or you're damned if you don't. I tell my friends that are old school, I go, you have to do social media. So I'd rather do and be damned and not do it and be damned.
Okay.
Because, like, if you put up a video and it has 3 views, you're like, damn! Ah! But you got to – and that's what happened. But I've had some videos that have gone super viral.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I did Steve Harvey just for the fuck of it. I was like, yeah, I'm going to tell you the Family Feud. Yeah. Number one answer on the board. You know, I was fucking around. That shit went so viral, it got to Steve Harvey. And Steve sent me a DM, and I read the DM like, I'm going to kick your ass. You got me fucked up, boy. You know, I had a mustache. I kept going, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, everybody knows Steve Harvey. And it went super viral. I didn't know.
Yeah.
But it went super viral. I've had.
Was that the first thing you did that went super viral?
No. What went viral was some stuff I talked about, like heavy racial stuff. But it went viral. But it went viral during the George Floyd shit. And this is stuff I did before the George Floyd. All of a sudden, all of that came into the forefront, and people were just rotating it. It just. I was like, oh, they were like, dude, did you see your video? It's going viral on TikTok. I was like, what video? Oh shit.
Mm-hmm.
It, you got to just throw things at the wall, because there's people that go viral. You go, what?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's consistency. You know what I mean? You just got to be consistent and just believe in your shit. That's, I don't even want to sound corny like that, but it's the truth.
And you
got to just believe and just keep throwing it. I don't give a damn what it is.
And like you said, you have to be able. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people who've been doing comedy 20 years who haven't taken to social media, they like, because they know they can crush it at a gig, the idea of getting low viewing numbers on something,
it's
and
like,
kind of failing or being seen to fail, they're like, they're not prepared to make themselves vulnerable again.
Yeah, you have to. And then also, you got to know the tricks too, because with Instagram, you got to pay a little money for them to actually expand your viewership. Unless something goes viral, then they'll go, oh, this person's doing pretty well. But you got to know the tricks. You got to talk to the tech people.
Okay.
For the algorithm, there's an algorithm trick. There's all kinds of
Well, this is something that fascinates me, is that one of the things I think that you're so excited about, and that a lot of us are, is that it feels like there's no gatekeepers because you can create your own audience. Yeah. Right?
Right. Sort of. Not.
But sort of not.
Other than
because,
China, yeah. Well, but there's really...
because the algorithm is kind of a gatekeeper,
yes,
right? You have to chase the algorithm.
You have
to
chase it. Yep.
Sacrifice things. You have to make those meetings. So what's the difference between that and the meetings when you're not prepared to kind of humble yourself in front of
the
TV
difference
people?
Is like you can be pissed at home. You know, your numbers aren't going right. This guy gives a fuck. It's still, you still have the freedom
there's
to
no,
recreate.
There's no other ego involved.
No
looking
ego,
down
and
on
you. You have another chance. Let me tell you something. That damn phone, man, that's like everybody has a phone, man. Think about the millions of people that have a phone.
Okay, more phones than people. There's more
right.
phones
if you
than
know,
people.
If you know who King Batch is, King Batch, I've done sketches with him. He has like 20, almost 25 million followers. So I met King Batch. King Batch goes, hey, man, I'd love to do a sketch with you. I'm like, great. He comes to New York. He's out of L.A. He's from Toronto. We're in Times Square doing a sketch. People from all around the world go, King Batch, King Batch. He doesn't know who these people are. He's never been to these countries. That's how big he is, you know? But that phone, man, that it, you can change your life. Literally, you could change your life with one fucking video. That's how Bert Kreischer, his life. I've known Bert Kreischer since 97. Bert Kreischer did this joke about the machine in Russia. And he goes, and he's the one that made me do podcasts. I was on Bert Kreischer's podcast. He goes, Godfrey, you got to do a podcast, bro. You got to do a podcast. I was like, all right. And he said, you know how my life changed was when I did that joke about the machine being
that's
in Russia.
Totally.
Built millions, and he like now he's doing arenas.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just it. You just gotta stay in it. You know what I mean? You just gotta stay in it. I don't know any other trick. You just go stay in it and keep doing what you're doing, but be smart. I think work smarter too, because you can work hard and get nowhere.
Give us some examples of working smarter.
Working smarter, doing sketches and shit, collaborating with other people. You gotta get that. It's like that mentality of old school hip hop. Because I'm Wu-Tang forever. Okay, and I hate mumble rappers, but you gotta kind of embrace. Don't like, you know, you gotta
the
embrace.
The point about Wu-Tang being the collaboration between them is
yeah,
that what you mean?
Even Wu-Tang will like or Nas will be like, let me get with these people. You still gotta embrace the younger shit. So that's what I did. I say, yo, let me get with these cats, and it worked out in my favor because you got a new demographic, and you know, kids, man, when they like you, it's like, yo, look at this guy, oh, and they fucking it spreads and it's great. So. You got to get with the times. My old manager used to say, don't ever piss against the wind. You know what I mean? You don't want it to splatter back in your face. Piss with the wind. So when there's a new wind blowing, go with that shit. You know, but you know you can still keep your integrity on how you do things. But it's good to actually you know fuck with the young kids. You know what like sometimes there's trends on TikTok. It'll be some dance, right? And you're like, fuck.
Because you feel you gotta do it.
And then you're like, whoa, I got 100,000. Because they go, oh, this guy is cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes you
does
have
it,
to
does
you
it cost
let
you
go
something?
To ego and go, all right.
Does it cost you something? Is there a thing where you're like, oh god.
But now that I'm used to it, I'm like, I'm a whore. I don't give a shit. I'm like this, what's up? Yeah, huh, guys? I go from real prolific shit to yeah. Is that the guy that was just talking about they didn't land on the moon, but now he's like fucking yeah you gotta learn the balance and you know.
So what are your other than your obvious phenomenal comic ability, what got you to where you are? If you ignore the actual comedy skill element of it, what are the kind of the superpowers that you've had that got you where you are in your
personality
career?
I'm good with people. No, I'm really good with people.
You are good
See,
with
I'm
people.
I don't want you to think I'm some anger. No, I'm just I'm a regular dude, man. I have good, my family's awesome. You know, I have good friends around me, you know, and I'm a pretty normal dude. I'm pretty.
I was thinking about this.
I'm not a weirdo. I'm crazy when I want, but I have that in my brain like, okay, you're being weird.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies, I think you know when a dude's talking to you, right? And his bottom lip sweats weird. He's like, hey, ladies, what's up? I'm not that person.
Yeah.
I know when I'm being weird. I have like a thing that goes, okay, that was weird. That was stupid. I have a lot of logic in me, just having a very logical father and mother.
Okay.
I got friends. I keep friends that are around me that check you.
Yeah.
That we're not afraid to go, hey, dude, don't do that. Mm-hmm. I don't want yes men around me. I don't like that shit. I want people to go, yeah, yeah, that was dumb. Or what do you wear? I like when I wear the wrong things and my friends go, yo, the fuck? We can see your nutsack. What are you doing? No, sorry.
Is that too early, nutsack? Scrotum?
No?
Okay. And someone who...
trying to use my thesaurus.
Go ahead. Someone who... as you say, you've got a robust, mentally healthy kind of outlook.
Yeah, you're happy.
I have outlets. Yeah, yeah. So why?
Reality checks.
So why are you a comedian?
Because I'm good at it.
Is that it?
When I was in college, I went to University of Illinois. Okay, I'm a Big Ten guy. And when you go to college, you become a fake adult. You start expressing yourself a different way, but then you need a care package from your parents. You're back to being a bitch again. But because when I was in college, it was like, you're talking about Big Ten college. My cousin's at Michigan. I'm at Illinois. 50,000 students, only 800 are African American. Mm-hmm. So you get real militant also. You start getting into African American politics and shit like that. You start becoming very, and I used to go see Minister Farrakhan in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a Muslim, none of that. But I wanted to see what, you know, because the news would say, he hates this. I go, let me go see for myself. I will watch a Klan member speak. I don't give a shit. I want to know what you're about. I watch him, so I would watch him, and that inspired me, listening to Malcolm X. And all, that inspired me to be more vocal. And then I was holding court in cafeteria. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm really thinking about doing comedy. I really think I want to do comedy. So we had Tommy Davidson. If you know Tommy David, he was from In Living Color. Very funny, legendary. He came to my college and did comedy, hung out with him on campus. And that really inspired me. I said, I really want to do comedy. And then we would listen to Richard Pryor in our dorm rooms a lot. Richard Pryor, Carlin. And I said, I think when I get back to Chicago, because I went away for school, I'm going to do comedy because this is where you can actually say to somebody, fuck you, and not get fired. I'm just being honest. You can go, yo, shut the fuck, and not get fired. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go to HR and talk to anybody. You can go, yo, suck my blah, blah, blah.
It's the freedom.
And they'll Yelp it, maybe. I'm going to Yelp that. Whatever.
But it's the freedom. I'm just trying to unpick what
it is.
It's
the freedom.
It's the freedom.
And the freedom of expression. Comedy is the place where you can say what you want, talk about your pain. But you got to remember to make people laugh, though. Because if you're just preaching, that's not fair to them. So look at this. It's a whole medley of people here, right? There's black, white, everything. Now, how am I going to do my Klan joke in front of these people? How am I going to make it palatable? Mm-hmm. You understand? And it's great that I can express my grievances in front of white males and white women and black people and go, yeah, hell yeah. But everybody laughs.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, that's the beauty of the shit. Yeah. Comedy is the most beautiful art form. It is. And when you can get it down, holy shit. I think the Oscars need to award people who do comedy a little more often because it's fucking difficult. It's very hard. I mean, listen, most comedians can do drama. Michael Keaton was a stand-up comic, guys. Michael Keaton did stand-up first. You got Robin Williams, Whoopi Goldberg. You got a lot of stand-ups. Kevin Pollak, stand-up comic. You know what I mean? A lot of people. Joe Pesci was in comedy first in Jersey. He was in a comedy team first. You understand? You had your man, Laurie, the British guy. Remember House?
Yeah.
He was a stand-up comic first. Dudley Moore, comedy first. You know, it was like everybody was comedy because comedy has drama. We are angry motherfuckers. Comedians are very angry people, but we convert it into, I'm going to make you guys happy, but I want to stab myself. Look at how Robin Williams, look at how he suffered.
Sure.
Robin Williams, a lot of different people suffered, but yeah, that's why we make, I'm not saying every comic's a great actor, but we can do drama because there's a lot of drama in comedy, you know? So.
Thanks, Godfrey. Before we wrap up.
I hope this was good to you all.
Before we wrap up, I want to ask you, we talked about your kind of superpowers, those qualities you have.
Speaking of Stanley, I met him 3 times. How's that?
Oh, nice.
When he was 89 years old, hung out with him for 3 hours in his office by myself.
Incredible.
My friend used to work with Power Entertainment, and that was just me and Stan Lee. And he goes, so Godfrey, how's comedy? I'm like, it was amazing. And also I want to tell you, Stan Lee said, he pointed to a poster of Wesley Snipes as Blade, and he goes, Godfrey, I want to tell you that Blade is the reason why Marvel is still around.
Yeah, right.
By the way, and they haven't made another Blade yet, you son of a bitches. They had 8 Hulks, 19 Spider-Mans, and we can't get our only black superhero because he didn't pay his taxes. Listen.
Well, let's...
Blade, where's your sword? Put it up for collateral.
We got 2 minutes left. What I want to ask is...
I just wanted to do that on purpose.
I know. What I want to ask is about what are those elements that you find harder in comedy? What are the things you see other comics doing and you think, I just can't quite crack that? What are the things that are out of your reach?
Nothing.
Yeah, what an answer.
No, I've been doing comedy a quarter of a century. You know, I've been doing it that long where I know I like what I do. But I do, when I look at certain comedians, I go, damn, that's a good fucking joke. Damn, that was good. Like certain people's take on things. Because, you know, it can be something like, okay, like that spy balloon. Who's going to have the best take? And I'll go, that was good. Fuck. You know, you. It's like the dunk contest. Everybody in the NBA is good, but they go, yo. You know when all the athletes go, oh, you know, even though they go, I can dunk, but that, it's like that. It's not like I go, oh, I don't got that. No, it's like you go, oh, there's certain moments you go, wow, I wish I had that.
So who of the newer comics coming up are you most excited about?
No one. No. No. No,
Whose dunks have you seen? Takes have you seen recently that you've been like, fuck, they're going to be
I forgot Jordan's last name. It's Black Kid Jordan. He's fucking funny, man. There's the Barbosa guy's good. There's the Barbosa. He's a little Latin dude. I don't watch a lot of because you know what it is? I watch my contemporaries more.
Yeah.
You know, because there's like unknown people that I watch. I go, oh, wow, that person's funny. I just don't remember their names. I go, wow. That person's funny. Oh, that she's funny. I just know I've watched Burr and all my contemporaries because we're, you know what I mean? Because we're in our primes like in comedy because we got it now.
So which of your contemporaries who are still alive would you go to for a take on something? Like the spy balloon happens and who are you thinking, I want to hear what they've got to say about this?
I would go to Bill Burr. I'd go to Norton, Jim Norton. I'd go to... there's a guy in Keith Robinson. I'd go to, let's see. And a lot of times I write all my own shit. So yeah, I'd go to guys like that know how to, you know, and then there's guys that are unknown girls, women and men that are unknown that I would go to for Colin Quinn, who's a little before my time, but Colin is such a great writer. And, so I'd go to those, but I don't go to a lot of people. Because I feel like my shit is dope, regardless, just to myself. You know what I mean? Me and Chappelle used to work on jokes every once in a while, a long time
ago. Okay, what did you learn from Chappelle?
Yeah, Chappelle's just fucking, he's one of the greatest, man. And he says, you can't cancel us. We're the greatest. Comedy is important. I can do Chappelle. It's weird. Because I've been doing, he's called me. He's like, what's up, nigga? Yo, I'm 10 minutes away from you. We got to talk about some things. You know, he's our modern day philosopher, man. He's fantastic. You know, I just get his freedom and not letting anybody like tell you what to do. You know what I'm saying? And I've known Chappelle since 97 too. Also, that's when I met him. So yeah, it's just once you establish yourself as a comedian 25 years, you're like, you can't tell me what to do, man. The fuck out of here. I mean, you can adjust a little bit, like. Even like, let's say with the LGBTQ, I have friends that are in LGBTQ that are comedians, that are trans men. So I ask them questions. I go, what can I say that's all right? What can I fuck with? That's cool. I get advice from them. Ask them. I go, hey, what can I talk about? Because a lot of your shit's funny. What can I do? And they go, talk about that, but don't do that. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to be able to talk about it because you exist with us. You know, you're like... You know, LGBTQ, I say, it's in a QIA?
Yeah.
Ligabitakia.
QIA plus.
I call it Ligabitakia. All my gay friends are like, oh, that's so cool. Ligabitakia. So I love them all, but I go, you got to be able to laugh at yourself because you're part of the community. You can't be special interest all of a sudden when it comes to comedy because a lot of my gay friends, they shit on each other all the time. So we should be able to all laugh as long as it's coming from a good place because... Why can't I joke with you? You joke on me. I can. A lot of my gay friends will say, oh my God, the vagina, have you seen it? Gross. I go, no, it's not. You know what I mean? I have a joke where I go, I say, I guess if you're gay when you're born, you don't want to touch the walls when you're coming out. Oh my God. Ew. Wah. You know, and my gay friends go, that's fucking funny. You know, I ask questions first. Because comedy is about information. It's about information and being well informed. So you go, okay, I know where the guide is, where you can laugh, where I'm not coming from some bad.
Well,
you know,
I think
homophobic.
I think your propensity to ask questions first is really important.
Very
because
important. I always ask.
We see comics who don't ask questions
first.
No,
I ask questions. I don't like to hide behind. It's just comedy, man. You got to come with some responsibility, too. You got to be responsible, too. And then, listen, sometimes people, even if you are responsible, people will still go, I was offended. I'm not in the mood for that. It's a new hobby, too, to be offended. I've talked about dogs, and people after the show go, hey, I have a dog. And what you said, I go, bitch, I got one. The fuck are you talking about? You're not the only one with a dog. Your dog doesn't know this is happening.
So that was Godfrey. Thank you to him for coming on the show. A very, very enjoyable conversation with a very exciting and upbeat man and a very, very funny comic. I mean, I can't, you know what he was saying about New York comics being of a different breed. Really, I didn't see anything to dissuade me of that at South By. In a festival full of extraordinary comic ability, Godfrey is just one of those. Do you know what? If you're coming at this from a purely British perspective, he is a bit like Terry Alderton in that he will follow anyone. Do you know what I mean? He will follow absolutely anyone. Most famous comic in the world. You go, yeah, Godfrey, you'll go on after. He'd be like, yeah, sure. He's just a destroyer. So seek him out wherever you can. And thank you once again to him for coming on. Thanks to Charlie for your skillful curation of the festival and for setting me an awful challenge to drink some Arby's curly fry flavored vodka, apparently upon which my return to the festival is now conditional. Sweet Christ. Thanks to everyone who recorded that one. Fatima was one of you at the sound desk at South by Southwest, but I'm sure you won't ever get round to hearing this because you were very busy with a million projects. But thank you to Rob Smouten for the music and loads of love to Moz, ComCom logger, who did this episode, I believe, who did in fact do this episode and is now hospitalised. So we at ComCom Towers, brackets, it's a cellar, send all our love to you, Moz, and I hope you are doing well and coping, and I'm sure I speak on behalf of all of the ComCom community, that someone like yourself, not to mention the infinite sofa people, someone like yourself is sort of a very cherished and valued member of that community, and we send you all of our love. So that is that. I managed to do that on one breath as well, which makes it sound like I didn't mean it, but I did mean it. Another breath, and there we go. Let's. I'll post Amble at you shortly, and for now, goodbye. Michelle next week, and then we've got Ignacio. We've got all the rest of the South By ones. God, James Adomian, Emma Willman, Steve Agee. That should probably go out next week as well. Having had a barren ComCom wasteland for 2 months while I was getting other things in order, I now have a surfeit of riches, and ideally my release schedule will be that they all go out on the same day, and then I don't need to worry about some internalized and completely made up thing whereby I worry that people are like, why hasn't he put my one out yet? And it gives me lots of stress. But in keeping with the new me and the new sense of this is all for the post-amble, right? New me, that's the starting point. If you're not sticking around for that, bye for now. Christ on a bike. Or as my son says, cripes on a bike. Mwah. Right, new me. This is the post-amble now. So one of the things that... Look, shall I try and do them on alternate weeks? Shall I try and do ones where I explicitly talk about the ADHD diagnosis on alternate weeks so that you can opt out? Or shall I just try and make it succinct? That's going to be hard. I keep noticing things. Obviously, you keep noticing it. When someone goes, oh, you've been like this the whole time, even if it's just that you're left-handed and you didn't realise, obviously there are some rippling things going on. And one of them has been that I am starting to try to take ownership of the fact that my memory's fucked and that it's all over the place. Like with the previews, I've been doing, did I mention this? I've been doing previews I did mention all of this and talked about it in depth, so I'll skip through it. I've been doing previews now using a clicker and going through a script on a keynote. Not like a script, but bullet points, rather than try and write down 80 bullet points on the back of my hand. I've been trying to go, no, I've got ADHD. I'm entitled to, I mean, in this case specifically, a laptop. So I've been trying to do that and be a bit more collected. And I've also been trying to say, and God knows how to phrase this, if I could boil this down to 6 words, hey, great to meet you, new friend. I struggle with names, and I am accepting and owning the fact that I struggle with names and not thinking that it must be because I'm a narcissist who doesn't pay attention to anyone other than themselves. I am likely to forget your name, so please, next time we meet, can you remind me of your name and some salient fact about what we were talking about? Because I do and will have a core memory of you and the things I think about you, possibly not the specifics of what we talked about, but a sort of general sense of I like this person and they're interested in this. I want to boil that down to 6 words. So I can, and also it needs to include, and look, I know probably everyone you're meeting in comedy has ADHD, but I also think it's valid that some of us do, and that it does, we could modulate our behavior slightly accordingly. And I refuse to be ashamed about it, because I've been ashamed about it and ashamed about my memory and my inability to be tethered to conversations as well as time and events and everything else forever. And I'm not going to be anymore. So if someone could boil that down into 6 words, me brain special, I don't know, God, I don't know what. But anyway, I've said, as you will have noticed, you know, like looking back over this, if you're, I should put, here's a fun idea. Why don't I release ComCom episode 0? And there, for anyone that wants to be a ComCompletist, rather than go through the journey from episode 1, where you discover along with me, what's the best way around? Do you want to, if you're new to this and you want to become a, I mean, it's no point asking you, because if you're listening to this one, then you've already made your decision. If you were a ComCom completist or intended to be, and you thought, I like this show, this one episode I've heard, I'm going to go back to the beginning. And look, very few of you do it, because it requires a Herculean, like a heroic amount of sort of focus and free time. But maybe you drive a truck, I don't know. Would it benefit you, or would it spoil it, to have episode 0 where I said, hey, here are the things to look out for as you become a ComCom completist? You will notice me gradually begin the, I mean, I don't think I started doing the postambles for a few years, but over the course of the next 10 years worth of episodes, you will hear me discover that I have ADHD. And if you know that in advance, it might be quite fun, because you can diagnose me yourself 8 years ago. You know what I mean? When I'm clearly waffling on about something and losing my place and feeling bad about it, you can go, I know where this is going. Also, spoiler alert, I marry her and have 2 children and they're brilliant. That'd be good, wouldn't it? Would it? Ah, might ruin everything. So other things to talk about include how jealous I am not to be in Melbourne at the moment. As I said, I just interviewed Michelle Brazier. She's just opening a new show in 3 nights, I think. And I'm feeling like when I interview younger acts, not necessarily newer acts, just young and newer acts, I'm starting to get a real sense of like, oh my God, people now, you know, in that way that's delicious that I love, and I often cut out, but sometimes leave in, when people go, hey, I'm a student of ComCom and I'm so thrilled. Like Tom was, bless him, Tom Horton did a lovely social post where he said, oh, now I know I'm a real comic. This was on my list, sort of thing. Obviously, love that. Don't want to wallow in it. Sometimes cut it out. Increasingly these days, leave it in. Keep an old man happy. But another thing that is parallel to that is that more, and of course is necessarily as that would happen, so this would happen. It's happening more and more that people talk about their lineage, their kind of, I mean, that's my term, their pedigree, or the people who inspired them along the way. And to me, those people seem like the new kids. So there'll be a brilliant act with multiple hours behind them who say, I think this is from the Michelle episode. She's, you know, she's done sketch shows. She's on her 3rd solo hour. And she says, oh, well, you know, I came up with so-and-so. And I'm thinking, oh, you were inspired by them? They're the new kids. So, of course, that's happening more and more. That's how time works. But it is, it's quite fun. And the key thing, what made me think of it, was that I feel really, I feel out of the loop. I feel out of the loop. There are so many new, exciting people out there doing things. And I suppose that hunger to be in the loop is what drives a lot of the fringe and the festival experience, isn't it? Because all of you are kind of warty old critics and reviewers and promoters and people who've been in the game 20 years plus. We all feel like, and comics, we all feel like we want to be, no, those comics of us who want to be Billy Fringe Guide. We all feel like, oh, I'm out of the loop. And that probably drives the fetishization of new stuff that arguably ruins the comedy industry. So there we go. Draw a little bow around that. That's some sort of point. I don't know, make a blog out of that. I won't get around to it. Yeah, you know what I mean. You know what I mean, right? That's like, I'm desperate to see, like, I really want to go to Edinburgh this time. I've got 2 weeks at the first 2 weeks, my family won't be there. Week one, bed the show in, do every possible spot I can, hope to start convincing a crowd to come and see my earnest, heart on my sleeve, funny, but occasionally terrifying climate crisis show. And then the second week then is going to be madly go around seeing stuff, collecting, doing my what I think of as my Edinburgh Panini album. I'm like, got, can't prioritise all of these friends because need. I've got to go see all these shows so that I can interview them later on in the year. And then the second 2 weeks, the final 2 weeks, I've sort of mentally gone, I'm just going to do my show and take my kids to the circus and hang out with their massive collection of street performing uncles and aunts and non-binary, that role. What is that? Is there a non-binary aunt and uncle role? Anyway, the point is, loads of street performers who I wish to sneakily have my kids brought up by whilst we all hang out in the street talking bollocks and watching the public go by. Oh God, I can't wait. But the point is, I only really get 1 week to focus on running around like a mad bastard, seeing all the new people and the new people, not even new people, but like just people who've got 3 hours under their belt now, who've kind of snuck up on me and who are exciting. So at some point there will be a big call out to recommend people, not yourself, on the Facebook ComCom group. But I really need my ear to the ground, you know? Oh, man, I think, is this what you humans call excitement? I think I've got a pretty fringe tickle on. I've got a real kind of, oh, man, I'm going to get there. I'm going to see so much stuff. Oh, I'm going to burst into tears on day three. Yeah, can't wait. Can't bloody wait. Right, that'll do me. I'm going to try and get one ahead. I'm going to record the Michelle Brazier blurbs now and then start getting ready to chuck. Oh, God, I've still got John Hastings Returns. That's another banger. Maybe that one can come next, or maybe I'll do the South By ones. You don't need to hear this. Don't look at me.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.